This is Sustainable Long Island. With co-producer Tony Ernst, I'm Francesca Rhiannon. How big is too big when it comes to building a new home, especially when that home is built on the site of a perfectly good former home that was torn down to make way for a new, much larger one? 6,000 square feet? 10,000 square feet? 20,000 square feet? Residents of East End towns are witnessing the demolition of their traditional semi-rural character with the rampant building of massive residences that are sized more like hotels than private homes. Overdevelopment in East Hampton and other East End towns is the subject of Jane Meering's blog and website, Build in Kind. Meering writes, "Aggressive building is of a scale and in a style far out of proportion and context with the character of the surrounding streets and neighborhoods. A surge in lot subdivisions is driving rapid densification where there had been a sense of open space. The effect on our natural resources is severe, as each year miles of woodlands, dune land, wetlands, and native vegetation are excavated. It compromises quality of life for human residents and is devastating for our wildlife and biodiversity." I spoke with Jane Meering this week. Here's our conversation. Jane Meering, welcome to Sustainable Long Island.
Thank you, Francesca. I'm really excited and honored to be invited.
I know you because we both are on the Energy and Sustainability Committee of the East Hampton Town. But I invited you on the show because I took a look at your website, Build in Kind. What does Build in Kind mean, and what's this website about?
Let me just start with the actual definition of the term Build in Kind. Build in Kind is a regular term used a lot around building and construction. And it, you know, historically it means I'm going to rebuild a house or renovate a house in its existing form, on its existing footprint, right? So it's kind of a low impact way of rebuilding and, you know, not a lot of expansion. I've taken poetic license with the term in terms of what it means for me and this organization I've started, which is, you know, how do we pursue the built environment in a way that has less impact than what we're seeing and is literally kinder to the land, to our community, to neighbors. And so, you know, I'm not using the strict term like you can't expand or you can't change, you know, the footprint, but it's about a mindset, really.
And what brought you to this project? I mean, what's in your background that made you do this?
So, I mean, I've owned a very small house out here in Amagansett, in a kind of a very natural resources heavy area that's known as Beach Hampton. I've owned it for about 21 years, but I've been coming out off and on, you know, to the Hamptons, or I hate that term, but to the East End really since the 60s. And I have very vivid memories and respect, you know, for the communities and the sense of place. And over the last year since I've moved out here full time, you know, really since 2018 to 2019, you know, I've really focused in on the changes that are happening very rapidly in terms of development and, you know, what I term overdevelopment and the impact of that on sense of place, character of neighborhoods, but also, you know, with respect to what should be our energy and sustainability and resiliency requirements, and also how this type of development, I believe, undermines our affordable housing needs and, you know, various other things. So I was kind of finding myself walking around feeling a bit angry and sort of a little sense of grief and sense of loss. And I just decided I needed to do something, you know, to channel that energy and to really understand, how do these things get built? How are they permitted? Who's building them? Why are they happening? So, you know, it's sort of been a long time in coming, but it was a way of doing something constructive that I didn't really think a lot of other citizens were doing specifically.
You mentioned the changes. I've also been coming out here since the 60s. I first came out with my parents in 1963, and the house that I live in today was built in 67. I've seen enormous changes that reflect the changes in the planet as a whole. I mean, we have a biodiversity crisis. We're in the midst of the sixth extinction. A million species are at risk. Bring that down to earth here. How is this phenomenon of overdevelopment affecting our biodiversity?
So, you know, obviously we're lucky on the East End because there have been many preservation-minded people and philanthropists and groups that have preserved a lot of our land, whether it's woodland or, you know, coastal adjacent or things like that. So that's great. But, you know, the way I see it, every single parcel that is developed is its own, you know, specific, you know, not just plot of land, but, you know, contains an ecosystem, right? It's the trees and the, you know, in many cases, native plants or natural features like wetlands or dune land. And so, you know, the difference between building a small footprint on a piece of property, you know, versus covering, you know, versus clearing everything on the property, digging 15 feet into the ground for the biggest footprint you can have, and then putting all kinds of hardscape and non-native plantings and all the chemicals and all the things that go into it. You know, someone could say, well, it's just one property, but out here development is going so quickly, you know, multiply that by 1,000, you know, and you've contributed to the loss of natural resources and the destruction of ecosystems. I know you had Gail Pellett from Change East Hampton a while back, you know, and they talk a lot about, you know, the quality of the soil and the biome and, you know, the importance of maintaining native plants. And, you know, I look at that as well as essential to the mandate of what I'm doing. You're displacing, you know, big overdevelopment displaces many, many things. And I'm sure we'll come back and talk about more like carbon footprint and, you know, things related to that. But from a natural order of things, it's very extractive and very displacing.
And I mentioned this house before. It's a mid-century modern house, very well built, works perfectly. And I remember a real estate agent visiting me for something else. Actually, it was somebody we know who was on the committee with us. And he said, yeah, this house is a teardown. And it just, you know, gripped my heart. It made me feel like I don't ever want to sell this if it's going to be a teardown. Talk about this phenomenon of taking perfectly good houses, tearing them down. What is the footprint we're seeing around us?
So, you know, I guess what I would call, I'll make up the term, the life cycle of a house. And I think this is something that's happening not just on Long Island or in this area. I think it's a sort of a very American thing right now. But, you know, the life cycle of how long a house stands and is viewed as usable or interest or acceptable or whatever it is, it seems to be shortening. And so, you know, what I'm seeing around here when I look at some of these applications, you know, people are starting to tear down things that are less than 20 years old. And I just want to back up for a moment. A lot of the building and redevelopment or development, and I'm really talking about residential here, commercial is a whole different topic. It's really being driven by speculative builders. Right. So they're not your typical landowner or your typical homeowner has needs and dreams. These are, I won't even call them investors, right? They are speculating. They want to completely maximize their returns. And so in their view, the way to do that is to build the biggest thing possible. And what's interesting is that our code, our zoning code, actually offers landowners very generous amounts of house size, clearing, coverage. But historically out here, people didn't build to that level. they built smaller, and I just think there was still an acceptance that we're living in this beautiful place. It's natural resources heavy. It's very special. It what defines us. It what protects our property value. But now this other force, which is very powerful, that is doing a great deal of development and construction, they don't care about the bees and the trees and the breeze. They just want to maximize. And so they're dropping houses right and left because they want to build bigger, or, you know, there's a whole, if you read any of the real estate ads, you know, and you read the litany of amenities, right? They list endlessly, breathlessly. You know, that's what's controlling land use right now in East Hampton and Southampton, and, you know, many of the other areas on the North and South Forks.
Yes. And on your website, Jane Meering, on your website, Building Kind, you talk about the real estate ecosystem. I assume these speculative builders are part of that. What are some of the other parts of the real estate ecosystem?
Yes, the real estate ecosystem to me includes people who do construction, builders, contractors, developers, the real estate community, real estate agents, architects, landscapers, landscape designers, you know, whatever. So it's really everyone who comes together to build or rebuild or redevelop a property. And the spec developers or all developers generally align very closely with our real estate community, which is a little vexing to me because, you know, our real estate community is still highly, you know, largely populated by people who have lived and worked here for a very, very long time. But, you know, it's hard to resist the siren song of the money that can be made from these developments. And so, you know, each of these applications is a constellation of a developer, a builder, some real estate brokerages or people, the landscape, like they're working in tandem and uniformly. And then I would also actually put into the ecosystem attorneys and these people called land management experts who work for and advocate for, like, in front of our boards and such, for these oversized projects.
So now talk about the boards, because it sounds like this is a formidable phalanx of interests who would oppose any kind of control on this kind of development. Where is our town? Where's our zoning board and architectural board?
Right. So there are, you know, there are two sets of boards that deal with code, right? Our East Hampton Town Board, and I'm just focused on East Hampton. This, you could apply this to Southampton or Shelter Island, right, or any other place. But our East Hampton Town Board, you know, they are the legislative bodies. They have the right to make code, right, to amend it, to add to it. So they have that legislative ability. There are three other boards, not elected. They're appointed by the town boards, as you just named them, the Zoning Board of Appeals, the Architectural Review Board, and the Planning Board. And they all basically interpret and sort of adjudicate the code for projects that do not qualify for what's known as an as-of-right building permit. So most building here, you know, someone comes in, wants to build, they go to the building department, they apply for a permit, and if there's no extenuating circumstance on the property, like wetlands or a natural resource or some sort of constraint, and the project meets the maximum code allowable, zoning code allowables, then it just gets a building permit and it goes whoosh. These other boards are in a sort of a little tight spot because they are permitted to have discretion relative to what the code allows for these different circumstances, but it's a bit of a, it's still a bit nebulous. And what happens is it's subject to interpretation, and more it's subject to litigation and aggressive challenges by applicants who don't like the board's decision. But back to your question, I think both the town board and these three boards, I believe from hearing them, listening to what they say, how they're deliberating, are uncomfortable. I think they've gotten uncomfortable because They always felt the zoning code was very robust, and now they see what's happening, and they're in a difficult spot. So I do believe our town board has gotten to a point where they are interested, and in fact, they've actually said it somewhat semi-publicly, so I'm not spouting off here, that they have started a process to, quote, relook at the zoning code and see if changes need to be made. And all three of the other boards I've heard them express, you know, publicly at their meetings, a certain amount of consternation that, you know, whether they're approving something in a historical district or a commercial project or in an agricultural area, that they don't seem to have the codified foundation to really be able to exert the discretion that they think they have.
You're listening to Sustainable Long Island. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. We're talking with Jane Meering, whose website, Build in Kind, explores overdevelopment in East Hampton and what to do about it. While it focuses on one community, it's relevant to any town that's facing the juggernaut of a real estate ecosystem that seems ever more out of line with the character of its place. So what is needed? If you could write the rules for the town board, what would you write?
You know, so there are many ways of coming at it, but just basically I'm going to geek out for, you know, 1 minute on code for listeners who might not know. So again, zoning code, which is our chapter 255, lays out, it's like a table, and it says it has about six different metrics: house size, height, how structures must meet setbacks, right, relative to the boundaries of their property, and the amount that the house can, amount of the lot the house can cover and everything can cover, and clearing. So the first thing, you know, that I think needs to be rewritten are the formulas that guide those allowable dimensions. So that's number one. I think they all need a look. They all relate to each other, but I do think they need a tightening up and a changing. And then, you know, the code also specifies different processes and different zoning districts and different overlays districts. So as an example, right, we now have in place a document that's been adopted called CARP, right, the Coastal Assessment Resiliency Plan. And, you know, so there, for instance, I think our code needs to be rethought and possibly rewritten to being even more disciplined and conservative about how we develop and use land along our any body of water and coastline, right? So aside from the overall dimensions, you know, I definitely think that, you know, some of these other areas need also a rethinking relative to our climate emergency imperatives, our coastal resiliency imperatives, and our affordable housing imperatives.
Talk about the kind of house sizes that we're seeing, and Could we put controls on house size? I mean, aside from setbacks and, you know, where you place your property, What about house size?
So right now, house size is determined in our town and in our code by a very simple formula: 10% of lot area plus 1,600 square feet. And then we have a maximum house size of 20,000 square feet.
But we've got houses that are 50,000, don't we?
Well, not real in East Hampton. No, I mean, not a residence. I mean, there's the famous Rennert house in Southampton that was, you know, all in 110,000 square feet. But, you know, you actually get to a point, and I've just addressed the board about this, so I don't want to get too technical, but when our formula that calculates house size, it only attaches or deals with what's above ground. Right. So if, you know, the formula says maximum, you can build 5,000 square feet, someone will build to that. But now, you know, basements used to be like dark, creepy spaces where you had storage, your mechanicals, and maybe your washer dryer, right? But now basements are full second living story areas, and they're, you know, they've got 10-foot ceilings, and they're the size of the footprint. And now you have this whole massive, you know, living space that consumes materials and energy, and, you know, to condition them. And that's not counted in the space. So actually, you're right. You could have a 20,000 square foot house above ground and like potentially, have a all in like a 40 or 50,000 square foot house because all that stuff underground is not counted.
And I didn't mean to imply that 20,000 was small.
I know, right?
I live in a 1,200 square foot house.
I have exactly that, 1,200.
So as we have seen, when East Hampton tried to close down its airport, when we have tried and successfully tried, but it was delayed for a long time to have wind power installed over the horizon, 30 miles away offshore. Yeah. There are these billionaire interests who have unlimited cash at their disposal, who sue the town and try to stop these processes. How can we fight them? I mean, it just seems like the town board by itself is an extremely fragile, and the other boards, extremely fragile structures. What is it going to take? How do we engage the public to boost support for controls on this overdevelopment?
So, the reason I started Building Kind East Hampton was to, what you just said, to engage the public, right? To build awareness and to motivate people. A lot of us all grumble, like we write, we sort of trash talk on Facebook comments, or we, grumble over coffee at like, oh my God, I can't believe what's going on here, right? So, my goal, just a little bit of a, background here, was to engage citizens. So that is one thing that has to happen. It's not even just billionaire. There are millionaire and billionaire interests that don't seem to believe that the public cares, that citizens care, because we've been quiet. So number one, it does start with us. It starts with raising our voices in a logical and thoughtful way to our town board to ask them to change the code. And I know I sound like a little bit of a one-note person here, but the only way to begin to limit or counter or push back on these, very wealthy interests is to harden the structure of the code, right? Because if you say you can no longer build a 20,000 square foot house maximum, I'm just making up this number, you can build a 6,000 square foot maximum. And if you say on an acre, you can no longer build, what does an acre allow? Like 6,000 square feet. You can only build 3,000 square feet. I mean, then it's in the code and it's very hard for any of these interests to sue, right? So, but until then, there's really, that is the town's defense. And codes can change, new boards can come in and they can undo them. We saw this happen in East Hampton Village not that long ago, that the new administration came in and undid, what had been an amount of restraint that had been adopted into their code. But it's really the first and best and really only defense against these lawsuit challenges around residential and commercial development. That's different than, people who will sue because of the interest of the airport and the wind. But, the airport issue and its overuse, to me, the root cause of it, or at least it's inextricably linked from how aggressive development is getting here. So in a way, we may, quote, solve the airport issue in different ways, maybe in the courts, but ultimately, it's about how we view and develop our land that creates the mindset that is driving, the very aggressive litigants in the, these lawsuits. So with the exception of, our local pilots, that's a different story. I think they have a different set of concerns and, things like that.
Right. And for our listeners who don't know, East Hampton has an airport that is used by 1%, the top 1% in income of our population, but has been implicated in a huge amount of environmental concerns, as well as noise problems for neighbors. And there is a lot of support for shutting it down because we have not been able to control them. And the town board, in fact, tried to do that and was sued by very wealthy interests. Well, this has just been a fascinating conversation. Tell our listeners, What are some of the things that they can do as individuals? Of course, they can go to your website. They can, you know, look, even if they don't live in East Hampton, they can apply the same principles. You know, should they be writing letters? Should they be going to board meetings? What are some of the effective tactics?
So, I think there are various channels and venues that the public can use to express themselves. So the first thing, you know, I think people actually need to do is the power of observation. You know, sometimes people come out here and they're enjoying their house or they're going to the same spots. It's really important to become an observer of what's happening around them in the built environment and thinking about how does this relate to quality of life and neighborhoods and climate issues and, you know, or ecosystems and stuff. But to be able to express yourself, we have every town board, East Hampton Town Board meeting, every single meeting, there is a thing called the public portion where any member of the public can appear in person or dial in and comment on anything that is on their mind. And so I am trying to engage members of the community to just 3 minutes, 2 minutes, get in front of the board in some way and say, you know, these are my concerns. This is what I'm seeing. And I would like the town board to acknowledge this and address it. And then, as you said, you can also write letters. You can write letters to the editor of the East Hampton Star or, you know, 27 East. And then specifically, when there's a zoning board or a planning board application where there are public hearings on individual projects that people might think are egregious or out of scale or environmentally profligate, they can participate in those hearings. I try and do some training via my website. So, you know, anyone can reach out and contact me. You know, Francesca, before I did it myself, I was nervous about it. I didn't know how to do it. It's a little technical to navigate. But once you get the hang of it, it's very rewarding and very satisfying to do. And it makes a difference.
Oh, that's great. Well, this has been terrific. Jane Meering of Build in Kind, thank you so much for talking with us here on Sustainable Long Island.
Thank you, Francesca. It's a pleasure.
This is Sustainable Long Island. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. We heard my conversation with East Hampton's Jane Meering, whose blog, Build in Kind, explores overdevelopment on the East End. That's build.in.kind.com. Sustainable Long Island is heard on the third Wednesday of each month at this time and also on the second Saturday of each month at 9 a.m. Programs are archived at sustainableeastend.blogspot.com. Sustainable Long Island is produced by Tony Ernst and yours truly, Francesca Rhiannon.